Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for having me at the baptism of baby Samuel. Really great to be here. And I've also had the pleasure of seeing what the joy that a child can bring into a person's life. So it was December, Christmas Day, 2014, that my parents received a very special present from my sister. And it was this photo frame. And on the outside of the photo frame read, "Merry Christmas, Granny and Granddad. I can't wait to meet you." And as the word sunk in, my mum started to scream, my dad announced that he was going to cry, and then the whole house kind of erupted with excitement. And then, you know, because inside the photo frame was the image of a scan. It was my niece at 12 weeks old. And for the next 6 months, we were all excited about the arrival of this baby. And we couldn't imagine life without her now. But what was it for my parents that made them that kind of helped them in their anticipation? Well, it was the photo frame. It was the picture of the scan. It was something in which to ground their expectation. But why is expectation such a powerful force? When expectations are not met, they can crush us. They can make us feel despair. But when we have a promise surrounding that expectation, it can inspire hope and give us a sense of a brighter future. And in our passage from Luke's gospel today, Jesus makes a very bold expectation-inspiring claim. He says, "They will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory." So how is this image of Jesus different to the Christmas nativity scene we have on our Christmas cards? Rather than a baby in a manger, we have the Lord of the heavens coming into Earth's atmosphere with power and glory, coming for a very specific mission, and a mission that we'll unpack in just a moment. But first of all, back to my niece, and she's now 3 years old, going on 30, and she's very, very inquisitive. And so my sister and her in-laws, they went to this place called Reading Abbey Ruins, and it's like an old medieval site where there was a monastery and a church, and that was for King Henry I. But now it's just like a set of broken down walls and it, kind of a shell of what it once was. And my three-year-old niece was walking around the ruins, really troubled by what she saw. And then after some intense sort of three-year-old thought, she said, "Abbey ruins? Who ruined it, Mummy?" And, you know, as cute and as innocent as that question sounds, there's a very profound point being made. Visiting the ruins must have been a fantastic day out for the family. It must have been great, and I'm sure the tour guides would have talked quite clearly about the majesty and the former glory of the monastery and what it looked like. But the fact remains, it is now in ruins. And this is the picture of the world that Jesus paints in the verses of Luke's gospel that we've read today. It's a world now plagued with distress among nations. It's a world now infected by fear and foreboding of what is to come upon the world. And we can see Jesus' words in a literal sense. I mean, a brief look together at our most recent news headlines will give us that picture. What's the buzzword for the day? Brexit, exactly. When we were on the street doing our surveys with people, someone thought we were asking them about Brexit. We weren't. We were asking them about the big questions of life. But it's such a pervasive question, Brexit. Or what about US gun crimes or police brutality or North Korea? Or I heard reports of flash floods in Sydney, Australia the other day. And I'm sure there are so many more crises that we can see becoming increasingly worse. And that's the literal sense of what Jesus is talking about. But at a deeper, more figurative level, Jesus highlights a really universal problem, that something isn't right with our world. And I heard a talk by Canon J. John about whether he thinks Christianity is fact or fiction. And he made a point and said that with all the research we have into incurable diseases, with all the number of charities we have, policy reform, education improvements, all of these things, they kind of point to Jesus' point that something isn't right with our world and we're trying to fix the symptoms and not the cause. And I wonder if in our very human condition, we know that something is wrong. The fact that all of us, I'm sure in some form or other, we kind of, with our best intentions, want to help with these social justice initiatives. But maybe that very desire to make the world a better place tells us that at present, it is not, and it is in ruin. So if this is the reality of the world, that something's not quite right, and this goes for every era, every culture, every time, so it's completely universal, then surely such a problem demands an answer. A universal problem demands a universal solution. Perhaps it would take a modern-day architect to restore the historical ruins of Abbey ruins, to have the benefit of hindsight, to fix the problems of the past. But then I wonder, could this really work? Because Abbey ruins, the king who commissioned it, he actually died before it was finished. 200 years later, it was finished. And then when it was finished, it then fell victim to the English Civil War. So it was just this constant picture, this of ruin. So we have no guarantee that the future generations, with all the benefit of hindsight, can fix the problems we have today or the problems that we've seen in the past. But why? And it's this common characteristic that ties us all together, our capacity in the human heart for good and for evil. And so we need someone who is purely good, someone outside of the distress among nations that we read about in Luke's gospel, someone who is not affected by the fear and the foreboding of what is to come upon the world. As I said, a universal problem demands a universal solution. And the Christian faith does give an answer. Where perhaps atheism resigns itself to the ruin of our world and kind of maybe gives up on it and says, well, technology is going to be the solution. Or where New Age beliefs say, actually, we're going to resign ourselves to the fact and, you know, the problems we have are actually an illusion. There is no answer. You just got to kind of grin and bear it. The Christian faith gives a definitive response to the suffering and to the ruin of our world. 2,000 years ago, that familiar Christmas card nativity scene was a reality. Jesus was born, God in the flesh. God stepped into our time and he got his hands dirty. He lived through our pain. He lived through our suffering and he died upon the cross. Why? To demonstrate God's love for his creation that unfortunately is in ruin. And when he died on the cross, there was a divine exchange that took place. So by taking upon our ruin, taking upon himself all the wrong in the world, he then gave us grace and he gave us forgiveness. And like the grainy picture of my niece in that photo frame, we have the promise that he is going to return. We will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. And you know, it's very rare that any trip or any visit that we make is without purpose. And so what is the purpose of Jesus' return? Why didn't he just do everything the first time? So if we've established that, one, something isn't right with our world, and that, two, Jesus came to die upon the cross to give us grace and forgiveness, then we now have three, which is Jesus will return to earth for final justice. And perhaps this makes us feel a little bit uncomfortable because as soon as you start talking about justice, you're looking for someone to blame. You're looking to point a finger for someone to take responsibility. You are asking, in the wise words of my three-year-old niece, who ruined it? And as a Londoner, I remember the tragedy of the Grenfell Tower fire in 2017. And I think even to this day, there isn't a definitive number of people who lost their lives. But I remember the public outrage when it was found out that some people pretended to be victims in the fire. They lived in luxury hotels for months on end, paid for by you and me, the taxpayer, because we wanted to help them in their despair, but they lied to us. And we wanted justice. We wanted for them not to get away with what they had done. And in the same way, Jesus will carry out justice. Having experienced what human life is like, he will return to earth with the same sense of outrage at what has gone wrong. And he will put those wrongs to right. He will not allow the ruin to continue. And so this is why we have the hope and the expectation that we will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. You know, today we celebrate Samuel's baptism. And it marks the beginning of his journey in the Christian faith. And we really sincerely hope that when he becomes an adult, he'll make an independent decision to follow Christ. But we can respond today. Maybe this expectation of Jesus as the Lord of love and justice is something you've just heard of. It's a totally new thing to you, the return of Jesus. Or maybe it's something that you've heard before and you'd like to deepen your commitment to the Lord. Well, I'm going to pray and invite you to echo this prayer in your heart. Jesus, I thank you for the love you showed in coming to earth and experiencing and overcoming life as we know it through your death upon the cross. And I'm sorry for all the things I have done to contribute to the world in ruin. I take responsibility. Please come into my life today and show me how to love others like you did and wait with expectation for your return. Amen.